Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise and, well, really get into the fascinating core of some complex topics.
Glad to be here.
Today, we're diving into what feels like a scientific detective story. We're chasing something that promised to be, perhaps, the ultimate sleep secret. A single, elusive sleep molecule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just imagine a natural chemical that could somehow flip a switch inside your brain, instantly sending you into the deepest, most restorative kind of slumber.
Sounds almost like science fiction, doesn't it? Like something out of a dream itself.
It really does.
Yeah, the idea of essentially bottling the Sandman's magic, you know, finding a direct shortcut to profound sleep, that's been a huge driver in sleep science for decades.
Right.
And the substance we're talking about today, Delta Sleep-Inducing Peptide, or DSE, well, its story is one of the most intriguing and, frankly, sometimes puzzling tales in the field.
A real treasure hunt, you could say.
Absolutely. A decades-long treasure hunt for that ultimate prize. A natural chemical that, well, many scientists truly believed held the key to instant duck sleep.
And what a journey it seems to have been. Full of these, like, thrilling discoveries, but also some really perplexing contradictions and maybe some surprising revelations along the way.
Definitely.
So in this deep dive, we're going to try and unravel DSIP's fascinating, often contradictory story. We'll look at its dramatic discovery, the huge hopes it sparked.
Right. The initial excitement was immense.
Then those mysterious scientific dead ends, and maybe the bigger insights it eventually gave us about our own biology.
It's more than just about one chemical. It's a journey through promising findings, yes, but also those baffling backfires.
Yeah.
And the lessons it taught science about maybe a bit of overconfidence and the true deep complexity of sleep itself.
And DSIP is something you might not have even heard of, right? Even if you're pretty clued into health and sleep stuff.
Exactly. It's not one of the household names like melatonin or GABA.
Which is precisely why its uncommon story is so compelling, I think. It feels like there are deeper truths for us to explore here.
It really makes you question our assumptions, doesn't it? About how easily we think we can fix something as fundamental, as multifaceted as sleep.
Yeah.
Its journey is a perfect example of the scientific process, really. The excitement, the inevitable setbacks, and that slow, sometimes painstaking way knowledge actually gets built.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. This is going to be quite the ride as we dig into the layers of this scientific mystery.
Okay,
so let's set the scene. We're back in the 1970s.
Right.
A time when sleep scientists were, as one expert nicely put it, kind of like treasure hunters.
Mm-hmm. A good way to put it.
Their mission. Finding the holy grail of sleep research, a single natural chemical in the body that could just instantly induce deep restorative sleep.
Yeah, imagine bottling that feeling, you know, that overwhelming, irresistible sleepiness after a really long day where your eyelids just feel heavy.
Totally.
And your body just craves rest. Now imagine giving that exact feeling on demand to someone struggling with chronic insomnia.
That was the dream, literally. The ultimate prize they were after. A simple, elegant solution to a problem that affects millions.
It really speaks to that human desire for a simple answer, doesn't it? A single fix.
Especially for something like insomnia.
Yeah, exactly. The idea of isolating one substance to control something as complex as sleep was just incredibly appealing. Almost intoxicating for researchers back then. They genuinely thought they were on the brink of a major breakthrough.
And then, 1977. A team in Basel, Switzerland, led by Dr. Marcel Monnier. They make this discovery that seems to bring that dream really close.
Right. They claim they'd found it.
And their experiments sound pretty wild even now. They were collecting blood directly from the brains of sleeping rabbits.
Yeah, think about that. Incredibly delicate, invasive work.
Sounds like something out of a spy movie almost.
Or sci-fi, yeah. But in that tiny bit of blood, they found something remarkable. A minuscule protein-like substance just floating there.
And the key part, the really exciting bit, was what happened next, right?
Exactly. That was the aha moment. When they carefully isolated the substance and injected it into other awake rabbits, the effect was apparently astonishing.
How so?
Well, these rabbits seemed to fall into a deep sleep almost instantly, very, very quickly. Like someone had literally just flipped a biological switch in their brains. It was powerful, immediate. Unlike anything they'd seen before.
Okay, so to really get why that was so huge, maybe we should quickly explain delta sleep.
Good idea. Think of your brain like a radio tuning through stations during the night.
Right.
When you're wide awake, it's playing fast, busy music, beta waves, maybe 30, 40 cycles per second, like a rock concert in your head.
Right, high energy.
Then as you drift off, the music slows, calms down, alpha, then theta waves. But the deepest, most restorative sleep, that's when the radio switches to these super slow, heavy, rhythmic drum beats.
Delta waves.
Exactly. Fewer than 4 beats or cycles per second. Incredibly slow, powerful rhythm. Think hummingbird wings versus an elephant's heartbeat. Slow, deep, fundamental.
Got it. So what Monnier's team saw in the rabbits was their brain activity switching straight from that busy awake pattern.
Directly to those slow, peaceful delta wave drum beats. An almost instantaneous transition. That's what was so striking.
And that's why they named it Delta Sleep-Inducing Peptide.
Precisely. DSIP. It literally means the thing that makes delta wave sleep happen. A very bold name, almost like a fairy tale solution, suggesting they'd found the brain's own natural sleep switch, the master key.
Wow. So the scientific community must have gone nuts.
Oh, absolutely. Incredibly excited, euphoric even. And it wasn't just a one-off. They could actually synthesize this peptide in the lab.
Make it artificially.
Yeah, a 9 amino acid chain, a tiny protein. And crucially, the synthetic version worked just like the natural one from the rabbits. It was unique, unlike other brain chemicals known at the time.
So the vision was clear. A future without insomnia.
That was the hope. That debilitating problem for millions could become a thing of the past. It really felt like the dawn of a new era in sleep medicine. Hashtag tag early warning signs and contradictory results.
Okay, but usually when something sounds that good, there's a catch, right?
Yeah.
Were there problems early on?
There were. Serious problems, actually, right from the start. Red flags that, looking back, probably should have made them pump the brakes a bit on the excitement.
Like what?
Well, the first big one was what some scientists jokingly called the toy in the room mystery.
Okay.
They couldn't find where DSIP actually came from in the brain. They looked for the cells making it, the factories, or the gene, the recipe for it, and found nothing.
Huh. That seems important.
It's crucial, biologically speaking. Mm. Almost every important substance your body makes, hormones, neurotransmitters, has a clear origin, a gene, specific cells. Your body's like this organized factory.
But not for DSIP.
Nope. No recipe, no factory, no clear gene being switched on. A total mystery. Which led some to wonder. Maybe it didn't even come from the rabbit's brain at all.
What, like from bacteria or something?
Exactly. Or maybe even from their diet. If that was true, calling it the brain's natural sleep hormone would be completely wrong. It'd just be a visitor with some effects, not a built-in regulator. That changes everything.
But the excitement kind of steamrolled over those concerns.
Largely, yes. The promise was just too big, so research pushed ahead. They started testing it more thoroughly in other animals, especially cats.
Why cats?
They're often used in sleep research. Their sleep stages are pretty well understood. And initially, what they found seemed to back up the excitement.
Okay.
When they injected DSIP directly into the fluid-filled spaces in the cat's brains, it's called intracerebroventricular injection, a direct route.
Right into the brain fluid.
Yes. The results were pretty remarkable. The cats fell asleep much faster, minutes, versus the usual 15 or 20.
Wow.
And their sleep was much deeper. Normally, cats might spend maybe 20% of their first hour in that deep, slow-wave delta sleep. With DSIP, over 50%.
That's a huge jump.
It was like an express elevator, skipping the lighter stages, going straight down to the most restful sleep. And this deep sleep boost lasted for about 7 hours.
7 hours.
Yeah. And what was really interesting, a key finding, was that their dream sleep, REM sleep, was completely unaffected.
Okay. Why is that significant?
It suggested DSIP wasn't just acting like a general sedative, you know, knocking out our brain activity. It seemed to be specifically targeting the deep sleep system that hinted at a more sophisticated, specific mechanism.
Right, more targeted. So still sounding pretty good at this point.
Yes, but here's where the plot thickens, gets really confusing, and throws up another major red flag about how useful DSIP could actually be.
Oh.
When those same scientists tried giving DSIP to the cats differently, injecting it into the belly intraperitoneally instead of directly into the brain.
Okay, a less invasive way, like how you might actually give a medication.
Exactly, the complete opposite happened. The cats actually slept less than normal.
Less. It backfired.
Totally backfired. A complete reversal. Like a spell working one way but going wrong another way.
Why? Why would the injection site make such a huge difference? That seems bizarre.
Well, this baffling result revealed some serious practical problems with DSIP. First, it suggested really poor penetration of the blood-brain barrier.
That protective shield around the brain.
Precisely. It meant DSIP couldn't easily get from the bloodstream into the brain where it needed to act. Second, they found DSIP was incredibly fragile.
Fragile, like it breaks down quickly.
Very quickly. It would apparently fall apart in about 15 minutes unless it was protected in that stable brain fluid environment.
Okay, so poor travelability and breaks down fast. That doesn't sound like a reliable hormone the body would use naturally, does it?
Not really. A natural hormone usually needs to be robust enough to survive the journey through the blood.
And this is where we start seeing some real disagreements in the science.
Yeah.
About these basic properties.
Exactly. You have one prominent view, maybe associated with folks like Matt Walker, emphasizing this fragility and poor blood-brain barrier crossing as major issues, explaining the inconsistent results.
Okay, that makes sense based on the GATT study you just mentioned.
But then you have other perspectives from researchers like Dylan Petkus presenting a quite different picture. Petkus suggests DSP is actually long-lasting, pretty stable at room temperature, and importantly, does cross the blood-brain barrier effectively.
Wait, so one view says fragile and can't cross, another says stable and can cross. That's a fundamental disagreement.
It really is. A significant divergence on basic characteristics. It shows that even decades later, there wasn't, and perhaps still isn't, universal agreement on these points. It highlights how complex this stuff is and how different interpretations can arise. We're left weighing different pieces of evidence.
Okay, so we've got this mystery about where it comes from, questions about its stability, its ability to get into the brain, and these contradictory animal results. But the big question remained, could it actually help people sleep?
Naturally, yeah, that was the ultimate goal. So in the early 1980s, human trials began. And the very first results sounded, well, almost too good to be true again. They really fueled that miracle cure idea.
Oh, so?
There was one study by a Dr. Hans-Erik Quaser, small group, 7 patients, all with really terrible insomnia, people really suffering.
Okay.
He gave them DSIP injections, then followed them for several months, and the initial reports were, frankly, astonishing.
What did they say?
6 out of the 7 patients claimed their sleep was completely fixed for 3 to 7 months after the injection.
Completely fixed.
For months. That's what they reported. And not just sleep. They said they felt happier, more alert during the day, too, mm-hmm. Which makes sense if you're finally sleeping well.
Wow. That sounds like a miracle.
It really did, on the surface, but
yeah,
there is a massive flaw in that study.
I was waiting for the but. What was it?
No comparison group, no placebo group.
Right. So you don't know if it was the DSIP or just thinking it would work?
Exactly. It's the placebo effect. Getting special attention, the ritual of an injection, the belief it'll help, that alone can have a powerful effect. Without a control group getting a fake treatment, you just can't tell if the drug itself did anything specific.
So you need those placebo-controlled studies, the gold standard.
Absolutely essential. Yeah. Some people get the real thing. Some get a dummy treatment. Nobody knows who got what, not the patients, not the researchers giving it. That eliminates bias and lets you see if the drug truly has an effect beyond expectation.
Okay, so when they finally did those kinds of rigorous studies with DSIP, what happened? This would be late 80s.
Late 80s, yes. And their results were, well, much less exciting. Disappointing, really.
Oh, no effect.
It seemed to help a tiny bit sometimes. People fell asleep maybe a few minutes faster, like 5 or 10 minutes quicker. And they spent a slightly higher percentage of time in bed actually asleep, what's called sleep efficiency.
But slightly in a few minutes doesn't sound life-changing for someone with terrible insomnia.
Exactly. The improvements were just too small to make a real meaningful difference to the patients. Most of the objective measures, how long they slept total, their brainwave patterns on EEG, even how they felt about their sleep subjectively, showed no significant difference between the DSIP group and the placebo group.
So the rigorous testing didn't back up the miracle claims at all?
Not really. The scientific consensus started to shift pretty clearly. DSIP was not likely to be of major therapeutic benefit for people with chronic insomnia. That initial intoxicating excitement had really faded under the cold, hard light of rigorous data. The simple sleep switch idea wasn't panning out.
Okay, so by the end of the 80s, DSIP is this real puzzle. It clearly does something powerful in animals if you inject it right into the brain.
Right. That deep sleep effect was undeniable in those specific conditions.
But in humans, given practically, the effect is minimal. And it has these potential issues, like fragility, maybe not crossing the blood-brain barrier well.
Exactly. Which led scientists to ask a really fundamental biological question. If DSIP is actually important, like essential for normal sleep, what should happen if you take it away?
Block its effects somehow.
Precisely. It's a key test. If something's vital, removing it should cause a big problem. So some Japanese researchers did an experiment like that in rats. They injected substances designed to neutralize any DSIP in the brain, basically blocking it.
Okay, so if DSIP is crucial for daily sleep, these rats should have had trouble sleeping, right?
You'd think so, maybe terrible insomnia. But surprisingly, nope. The rats slept just fine. Their normal sleep patterns continued.
Really? So taking DSIP away didn't mess up their sleep?
Didn't seem to for normal everyday sleep, which made scientists seriously question if DSIP was really a vital day-to-day sleep regulator, maybe not the master switch after all.
But science is never simple, is it? Did other research suggest it did matter in some situations?
Yes, exactly. Other studies found DSIP might play a role not necessarily daily, but in specific circumstances. For example, when rats were sleep deprived, kept awake for a long time, and then allowed to sleep.
Their brains produce more DSIP.
It appeared so. And this extra DSIP then seemed to help facilitate that extra deep recovery sleep, helping them catch up more efficiently.
Ah, okay. So maybe it's not for routine sleep, but more like an emergency reserve.
That became a leading hypothesis, kept in reserve for emergencies like severe sleep debt. A specialized repair crew, maybe, rather than the regular maintenance team.
Interesting. Were there any hints of that in humans?
There were some observations, like DSIP levels in human blood sometimes dropping suddenly right before sleep onset. The idea was maybe it was rushing into the brain then.
Although we still have that question about whether it could easily rush into the brain from the blood.
Exactly, that debate continued. Also, some studies found correlations. People who naturally had deeper sleep tended to have different DSIP level patterns. But correlation isn't causation, right? It didn't prove DSIP was causing the deeper sleep, it was just linked.
So its role seemed to be shifting, not the main switch, maybe more conditional. But then things got even more interesting with modified versions.
Yes, this is where the story takes another turn, and actually a more hopeful one for understanding the underlying biology. Scientists started tinkering with the DSIP molecule itself.
Changing the recipe.
Yeah, tweaking that 9-amino acid chain, changing a few ingredients, hoping to make it more stable or bind better to brain cells or just work more effectively. Most of these modified versions didn't do much, just like the original in human trials. But then, a breakthrough. They found two specific, specially tweaked versions that worked much better than the original DSIP,
How much better?
consistently boosting deep sleep by about 10 to 15%. Remember, the original often showed minimal or no effect in humans. This was a significant, consistent improvement.
Wow, okay, what does that suggest? If modified versions work better.
It's fascinating. It strongly implies the original DSA might have been like an imperfect attempt by the brain, a rough draft of something that could work if optimized.
So the basic idea was right, but the molecule itself wasn't quite up to the job.
Kind of. More importantly, the fact that these modified versions did work consistently strongly suggested there really is some kind of sleep receptor in the brain, a specific docking station that responds to DSIP-like things.
Ah, so the target exists.
Exactly. The original DSA might just have been too weak or too unstable or broke down too fast to hit that target reliably. But a better designed key, a more robust version, could unlock its potential.
That's a crucial insight, right? Even if DSIP itself wasn't the magic bullet, it pointed towards a specific mechanism, a target we could potentially aim for with better tools.
Precisely. It opened up a new avenue, even if the first path was a bit overgrown and confusing.
Okay, so the early story is all about DSIP as this direct sleep inducer. But then we hit the challenges, stability getting into the brain, the conflicting results.
Yeah.
But you mentioned this isn't the only way scientists view DSIP now.
Right. There are other perspectives, like those highlighted by researchers such as Dylan Petkus, which offer a different, maybe broader view of its properties and roles, sometimes challenging those earlier conclusions about, say, stability or blood-brain barrier crossing.
So if we look beyond just does it make you sleep instantly,
Yeah.
what else does this molecule do according to this broader view?
Well, Petkus and others describe DSIP not just as a simple peptide, but as a small little protein acting as a very potent signaling
A
molecule.
signaling molecule.
And its signal, in terms of effect, is quite similar to GABA.
GABA, the brain's main calming or inhibitory neurotransmitter, right? The brake.
Exactly. And DSIP often seems to actually trigger the release of GABA, amplifying that calming effect. So it's working with existing systems to reduce neural excitability, promote relaxation.
That's more nuanced than just being a sedative itself. And it's not just found in the brain, you said.
Absolutely not. While the brain is key, DSIP is found pretty much everywhere. Every single other organ system: heart, kidneys, liver, pancreas, gut.
Wow. So it's systemic. What does that imply?
It strongly suggests much wider roles than just sleep. Maybe it's involved in broader physiological regulation, maintaining balance homeostasis, or maybe modulating the body's response to stress generally.
Okay, so if it's everywhere, how does it tie back to sleep specifically in this view? The original studies mentioned levels dropping at sleep onset, which seemed weird for a sleep inducer.
Right, that's a key point Petkus addresses. The mechanism seems more refined. DSIP acts on crucial sleep control centers, the hypothalamus, brainstem. It influences neurotransmitters, especially GABA. But it's not just about having a high level.
No.
Apparently, it's the dynamic change, the rising and falling, like a wave or crescendo decrescendo of DSIP levels that acts as the actual signal for sleep induction.
Like a rhythm.
Exactly. It seems to generate rhythmicity within the sleep architecture, affecting both deep sleep, slow wave, and REM sleep. So it's less about a static on switch and more about orchestrating the timing, the rhythm of the whole process. Much more complex.
That makes sense biologically. So many things are cyclical. And you mentioned non-sleep functions. Given it's found everywhere, that fits. What else does it do?
Yes, that rhythm generation likely extends beyond sleep. A major non-sleep function seems to be stress reduction.
How does it do that?
It appears to decrease the production and release of stress hormones like cortisol. And crucially, it also seems to reduce how sensitive your cells are to those stress hormones.
So less stress hormone produced, and the body reacts less strongly to what is produced.
Exactly, a dual action, promoting relaxation, helping the brain calm down rhythmically. Rat studies showed significant effects like a 30% drop in their version of cortisol and less stress behavior in maze tests. It seems to directly modulate the stress response.
That's huge, because chronic stress is such a massive barrier to good sleep for so many people.
Precisely. The link between stress, sleep, and overall health is undeniable, and DSI seems to sit right at that intersection.
Any other major non-sleep roles?
Another critical area highlighted is neuroprotection. This is particularly relevant when we think about things like brain fog.
Which feels like more than just being tired sometimes.
Some researchers view it as potentially a very subtle form of neurodegeneration, indicating underlying stress or damage to brain cells. DSIP has shown protective effects in animal models of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. It seems to reduce stress on the neurons themselves and has direct neuroprotective qualities.
Okay, let's connect the dots there. We know poor sleep, anxiety, cognitive decline are all linked. Brain fog might be an early warning sign, so a compound that reduces stress on brain cells and protects them, that could be significant long term.
Potentially, yes. Not just for feeling sharper day to day, but maybe for protecting cognitive health down the road. The implications are pretty broad.
Wow. Anything else?
One more area is pain relief. DSIP is described as having very potent anti-pain responses.
Anti-pain. So it could help with chronic pain conditions.
Potentially, yes. Things like fibromyalgia, chronic regional pain syndrome, neuropathic pain, its ability to modulate pain signals combined with the stress reduction and sleep benefits makes it look like a possible holistic modulator for some really complex conditions.
So this broader view paints DSIP not just as a failed sleep switch, but as this complex signaling molecule with widespread effects on stress, brain health, pain, and rhythmicity.
Exactly. Much more than a one-trick pony. Even if its initial billing as the sleep peptide was maybe too simplistic or faced practical hurdles, it's a fascinating molecule from this wider perspective. #, modern use, anecdotes, and cautions.
So given this more complex picture, potential roles in stress, brain health, pain, plus the original sleep connection, where does DSIP stand today? Is it being actively researched or used?
Well, formal large-scale clinical research seems less active now compared to its peak in the 70s and 80s.
Why is that, do you think?
Several factors, probably. We now have many other approved sleep medications that are often easier to take, maybe seen as more reliable by the pharmaceutical industry. Plus, those persistent questions about DSIP's bioavailability, how well it gets into your system and brain, and the inconsistency in human trials likely made it less attractive for big drug development investment. Mm-hmm. Science often moves towards compounds with fewer hurdles.
Okay, so less formal research. Mm. But what about anecdotally, you hear about peptides online these days.
Ah, yes. And this is where things get really interesting and often contradict the formal data. If you look at online forums, user communities, it's almost a 50-50 split.
How so?
About half the people trying it report basically no effect, nothing. But the other half, they absolutely rave about it.
What benefits do they report?
Things like significantly improved sleep quality, feeling their sleep is much deeper, more restful, fewer times waking up during the night, falling asleep faster, Many also report less anxiety, feeling calmer overall, which links back to those non-sleep effects we talked about.
That's quite a difference from the clinical trial results. Any other common reports?
Yeah, something that comes up frequently is experiencing very vivid dreams, even lucid dreams, where people become aware they're dreaming.
Vivid dreams. Is that significant?
It can be. Your ability to dream vividly and remember dreams is often linked to good sleep quality, particularly healthy REM sleep, and some even connect it to deeper things like mitochondrial function. So if DSIP is enhancing that, it might suggest it is promoting a more restorative, perhaps rhythmically sound, sleep state for those individuals. It fits with that idea of generating sleep rhythmicity.
Okay, so how are people actually using it, if not through formal prescriptions?
Typically, it's sold online as a research peptide, usually as a powder that needs to be reconstituted.
Meaning you have to mix it yourself?
Yes, usually with bacteriostatic water, sterile water with a preservative to make it safe for injection. Administration is most commonly subcutaneous, just under the skin, or sometimes intramuscular, into the muscle.
Are there other forms? Pills or patches?
Some oral or transdermal versions are appearing, but their bioavailability, how much actually gets absorbed and is active, is largely unknown and generally considered much lower than injection. So most anecdotal reports of strong effects come from injection users.
How about dosage?
User reports and older studies suggest starting doses around 100 to 200 micrograms, or MCG. Some people go higher, maybe up to 400 millicurie, looking for stronger effects. For sleep, the common advice is to inject it 30 to 60 minutes before bed.
Any other timing?
Some people experiment with smaller doses during the day for anxiety relief, trying to avoid too much sedation. And cycling is common. Some use it continuously. Others might do a cycle of, say, 1 or 2 weeks to try and reset sleep patterns, then take a break.
Okay, this all sounds very experimental. We absolutely need to talk about warnings and safety here.
Crucially, yes. It is vital to stress. DSIP, like any supplement or peptide, is not a magic silver bullet. Individual anecdotes are just that, anecdotes. They don't replace proper safety and efficacy testing.
What are the potential downsides or side effects people report?
Common ones include things like nausea, headaches, sometimes feeling overly sedated or drowsy, especially with higher doses or if timing is off. And the bigger issue is the unknowns. We really don't have good data on long-term safety, especially with continuous use, interactions with other medications, supplements, or underlying health conditions, largely unstudied in this modern context.
Right, and you're buying this stuff online, often as research chemicals. That sounds risky.
It absolutely can be. The online peptide market is often called the Wild Wild West.
Mm-hmm.
Quality control, purity, accurate dosing, it can all be highly variable and unregulated. You don't always know what you're actually getting.
So this raises a big question for anyone considering this route. How sustainable, or even how natural, is injecting yourself with substances from largely unregulated online sources?
It's a very valid question. We have to issue a strong caution here. Using these things without medical guidance, without understanding the significant risks and unknowns, is playing with fire. Fascinating science, yes, but practical use outside controlled settings today is really fraught with uncertainty. Health and safety have to come first. Always talk to a qualified healthcare provider.
So after this whole journey, the initial excitement, the confusing results, the broader view, the modern anecdotal use, what's the final takeaway on DSIP? What's its real legacy?
Well, it seems clear DSIP isn't that single dominant master sleep switch they first thought it was.
Right.
It's much more likely just one instrument, maybe a nuanced one, in the incredibly complex orchestra of sleep regulation. Sometimes it might play a key part, perhaps during stress or recovery.
But usually it's just part of the background harmony.
Probably. Contributing subtly to the overall rhythm, so its biggest legacy might actually be less about DSIP itself and more as a really important cautionary tale for science. It's a powerful reminder to avoid getting carried away by exciting initial results, to stay objective, and to really rigorously question our hypotheses, not just try to explain away results that don't fit our favorite idea.
That initial idea of one single substance controlling all of sleep seems almost naive now, doesn't it?
It really does, given the complexity we now appreciate. DSIP's story shows beautifully how science works. The false starts, the dead ends, the detours. But even the ideas that don't pan out teach us invaluable lessons. They point us towards the deeper truths, the real complexity.
And that complexity of sleep is just vast. It's not one chemical, it's brain networks. multiple messenger systems, serotonin, dopamine, GABA, acetylcholine, orexin.
All working together. Plus that intricate dance between our internal body clocks, our circadian rhythms, and our metabolism. It's a whole body phenomenon. There's no single button.
Which brings us to the real root issues for getting better sleep long term, right? Moving beyond chasing these individual silver bullets.
Exactly. And one huge root issue is our circadian rhythm. Remember we said DCIP itself seems involved in rhythmicity and it's found everywhere, like melatonin.
Yeah.
Well, your circadian rhythm is that fundamental 24-hour clock governing almost everything. Sleep, wake, hormones, digestion, and honestly, many people today have a seriously disrupted, almost garbage circadian rhythm.
Why? What disrupts it so much?
So many things in modern life. Inconsistent schedules, lack of natural light exposure, too much artificial light at night, poor diet, sedentary lifestyle, chronic stress, even environmental chemicals. Like formaldehyde, found in many homes, can apparently disrupt melanopsin.
What's melanopsin?
It's a key protein in your eye that detects light specifically for syncing your internal clock. If that's messed up, your whole rhythm gets thrown off. And when your rhythm is off, deep restorative sleep is incredibly hard to achieve consistently.
Okay, so circadian rhythm is fundamental. What else is key if we're looking beyond single molecules like DSIP?
The other absolute cornerstone intricately linked with circadian rhythm is mitochondrial health.
The powerhouses of our cells.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They generate the energy, the ATP, for everything. And they are a main cog in driving your body's circadian rhythms. Mitochondrial dysfunction, when they're not working well, is often at the very core of so many chronic health issues.
Including sleep problems.
Definitely. But also chronic fatigue, hormone imbalances, thyroid issues, even potentially neurodegeneration down the line. If your mitochondria are struggling, your body's energy and rhythm are compromised, and that directly impacts sleep quality.
So what does this all mean practically if someone wants to really improve their sleep and health sustainably?
It means shifting focus. Instead of looking for the next DSIP, the next hack, the focus needs to be on optimizing these foundational systems. Stabilizing your circadian rhythm and boosting your mitochondrial health. That's how you move from just surviving, feeling like you're in crappy survival mode.
To actually thriving.
Exactly. To experiencing sustained energy, mental clarity, and naturally restorative sleep. It requires a more holistic approach.
It sounds like instead of chasing silver bullets, we need to build a robust golden system for health, addressing these core biological processes.
Beautifully put. It's about understanding the whole symphony of your biology, making sure all the sections are playing in tune, not just hoping one trumpet solo will fix everything. DSIP's winding story ultimately points us right back to that fundamental interconnected truth. Hashtag tag tag outro.
So the journey of delta sleep inducing peptide really is quite a tale, isn't it? Full of twists, turns, the allure of simple answers, and ultimately a lesson in the deep, enduring complexity of our own biology.
It certainly is a fascinating detour in sleep science.
And while DSI taught us a lot, maybe its biggest lesson is guiding us away from just seeking quick fixes. It points us towards needing a deeper, more holistic understanding, focusing on optimizing those foundational systems for lasting health and truly restorative sleep.
It really encourages that bigger picture view, appreciating the intricate dance of life within us.
So as you think about this deep dive, maybe consider that very human tendency we all have, seeking the quick fix, the simple solution for complex problems. How might understanding a nuanced, sometimes contradictory scientific journey like DSIP's illuminate deeper truths, not just about health, but about progress in general? And maybe ask yourself, what other potential silver bullets out there in health or other parts of life might be distracting you or us from addressing the foundational systemic improvements that could ultimately yield far more profound and lasting benefits?